in John chapter 9. And we're going to finish two things this morning. We're going to finish this part of our study on the man born blind. And then also this is going to complete this whole study that we've been doing. So we're going to finish finish this study with this part this morning. Just by way of a note for you that if you want to read a little bit ahead, beginning next week, we're going to start a study on the book of James. And that, I think, will be a good study for us to join into. And so, again, I just want to encourage you at least maybe read at least the first chapter of James for next week. All right? Now, we have been, in this study, of course, we're talking about the Jesus touch and looking at different circumstances, different people that Jesus came in contact with under the circumstances they were in, and what did Jesus do with those people? How did he interact with them and so forth? Basically bringing them from wherever they were at that point of coming in contact with Jesus to where Jesus wanted them to be, and primarily in relationship with him. And we've been over the last couple of weeks talking about the man born blind. And as we've been looking at this, we were talking about labels and looking at how how we use labels to put on people. That's what we use to identify people with, is labels. And we oftentimes will say, well, we identify a person by that particular label. This is the the guy that works at the grocery store or the gas station, or this is, the nurse at, the emergency room that I've seen over and over again, or whatever the label. In other words, we don't know that person's name, and we don't really know a whole lot about them, but we just kind of identify them with a label. And this particular man here is labeled as a blind beggar. And we went through and we looked at different groups of people or different people as to how they saw this man. Okay? And of course, we said at the very beginning, Jesus' disciples saw him. Does anybody recall? How did they see him? What? Right. So they basically saw him as a topic of theological discussion, didn't they? Here's an opportunity for us to get an answer from, the master here, the teacher. Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind? That's a good, topic for religious discussion. So that's really how they saw him. Okay? We talked about the neighbors. How did they see him? What was their label for him? Yes, not just the blind man, but the beggar. He's the blind beggar. Isn't this the man that used to sit there and beg? Yeah. Some said that he was, some said that he wasn't. He looks like him, but that's the label that they put him. He's the blind beggar. You see? What about the Pharisees? How did they see him? Anybody recall? For them, he was a problem. Okay? We talked about him. For them, he was a problem because everybody knew that he had been born blind, and now he can see, and they knew Jesus, he's the one, and so this creates a problem for them because, of course, they did not like Jesus. So to the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, this man was a problem. That was the label that they, in a sense, kind of put on him. Okay? And then we talked about his parents. How did they see him? What was the label that they put on him? Put a family label on him. Yes, he's our son. In other words, he has a position in our family. But he's of age. He can answer for himself. We're no longer responsible for him. Okay? So all of these folks had in one way or another put a label on this man. And Jesus, how did Jesus see him? Saw him as a person. Okay. And Jesus used his touch to see, to make a difference in this man's life. Now, up to this point, what we were talking about is, you know, how Jesus heals this man, and then, again, all the interaction of everybody else involved in this. But what's the result of the Jesus touch with this man? Okay? As we continue looking at the rest of this story, there's two parts of it that I want us to focus on. Beginning in verse 24, and I basically call this no longer a label. Okay? Everybody else had put a label on this man, but it's almost as if he had determined at this point he's no longer going to be just a label. Okay? Do you notice what's taking place? Let me get somebody to read for us, beginning in verse 24 down to verse 34. Somebody want to read that for us? John chapter 9, verse 24 to 34.
A second time they summoned the man who had been blind to give glory to God by telling the truth, they said, "We know this man is a sinner." He replied, "Whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see." Then they asked him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered, "I have told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too?" Then they hurled insults at him and said, "You are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from." The man answered, "Now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." To this they replied, "You were speaking sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" And they threw him out.
Okay. What do you see happening here with this man? What's he doing? He's standing up for himself.
I don't think also standing up for Jesus.
Exactly. Yeah. He's determined to no longer be a label. What we see him doing is standing up for himself and standing up for Jesus. But he's not just standing up for himself and Jesus. Notice who it is that he's standing up against. Okay? This is huge. All right? Because common people don't talk to the teachers of the law and the Pharisees this way. They, it shows a tremendous, tremendous amount of courage on his part, and it shows a tremendous amount of determination. Okay, for him to speak this way to, you know, these Pharisees. It's just remarkable when you consider where he was. Okay? He's a blind beggar. His status in the community, say, was, in other words, he's, as the term goes, he's low man on the totem pole. But yet here he is standing up to these religious leaders. Okay, Brian? Isn't it amazing, the point here that, you know, when somebody has an infirmity, especially something like blindness or what have you, and they're like the blind beggar in that day would be sitting, you know, at the corner somewhere or whatever, you know, with a cup of people to literally put money into, that's kind of how they supported themselves. And isn't it kind of funny how when we encounter people, you know, like that, even them, they're there, but they're not there? It's almost like, because they can't see us, we don't see them. And so, you know, yeah, you just kind of wonder how many conversations did he hear and people talking perhaps about him or about others as if he wasn't even there. You know? And so a lot of the things that he probably did hear. Yeah.
And most of all, because he listened, he had a whole lot more wisdom in his little finger about God than the Pharisees, who should have been more knowledgeable than them.
Absolutely. And for this man to say the things that he was doing, that he was saying to these leaders, I mean, go back and look at it here. You know, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know is I was blind, but now I see. You know, I mean, there's a declaration right there. I was a blind beggar. That's what I was until I met this man. I don't know much about him. But one thing I do know is I was blind and now I can see. Okay? You know, what did he do to how did he open your eyes? I've already told you that. You know? I already told you that. You didn't listen. I mean, you know, people just didn't talk to these religious leaders that way. Not and get away with it. See? That just wasn't done. Okay? I mean, think about it this way, and I try to discourage this kind of thing, okay? Because I'm just me, okay? But you know how people get when they get around the preacher, right? You know, they're real careful about how they're going to talk, you know, and all these kinds of things, you know, and so forth, and, you know, don't want to say anything, and, you know, bad, and, you know, all that kind of, you know, we just get real careful when we get around, you know, the man of the cloth. You know, I mean, just think about it. The folks back then, this, you know, these common folks, they did not, you didn't lock horns with the teachers of the law and the religious leaders, okay? It just wasn't done. And he's locking horns. Basically, what he's doing is he's calling them out, so to speak, okay? What is their fallback to? What's their fallback position here concerning this whole situation with Jesus? Who do they fall back to?
Moses.
Okay? That's their fallback position. You know, we go back to Moses, the lawgiver. Okay? And that's where we get our authority from. Okay? And, you know, we know that Moses spoke to God, but this man, we don't even know where he came from. You know, what kind of authority does he have? Right? Oh, yeah. That's really interesting. This man opened the eyes of a blind man. You don't even know where he came from?
Oh, yeah.
The last part here, verse 31, look at this particular statement. Again, and this may be that, you know, the words of a man who'd been blind all of his life and the wisdom, the things that he'd heard, you know, and so forth, Brian, as you mentioned earlier. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to godly men, to the godly man who does his will. Okay? The student is teaching the teacher. Okay. The statement that he makes here, we know that God doesn't listen to sinners. True or false statement? Okay. It's not true. I'm glad it's not true. God does listen to sinners. Otherwise, there's no way for us to repent of our sins and call upon him, right?
Yeah.
You see? So indeed, God does listen to sinners, but that was part of the common belief back then. Their response to him then comes back in this, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? What does that go back to? Yeah, the original question that the disciples asked, right? Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind, you see? You know, again, their take on it is, look, you were a sinner from birth. That's why you've been blind all your life. How dare you lecture us? We're the religious elite. What? Yeah, we're coming to that. Yeah, but you're right, you see. But you see, here's the point of this particular part of it that I want you to look at. You know, what has this man really done after Jesus had healed him? You know, what has Jesus really given him? Not just his sight, but what else did he give him? He gave him an identity that allowed him to do what? Oh, what a voice. He stood up for himself. See? He was able to stand on his own. See? And think about what that means. See, I think so often we look at a story like this and we go, yeah, wasn't it great? Jesus, you know, gave him his sight. But Jesus gave him so much more than just his eyesight. You see? He gave him himself, his personhood, his identity, so that he could take that label and cast it off and be a real person. And so I think that, you know, the thing that maybe we can take away from that is that when we remove labels from people, then perhaps maybe it helps them to stand on their own. Gives them the ability then to have a voice and to be a real person and not just a label that they've had attached to them. And so an important part of the Jesus touch is getting rid of the label. Allow people to be a real person. Now, let's talk about the being blind as bats part. Okay? The last section in this, can I get somebody to read for us verse 35 down through the end of the chapter, verse 41? Who wants to read that for us?
Heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" He answered and said, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" And Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you." Then he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshipped him. And Jesus said, "For judgment, I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind." Then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, "Are we blind also?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, 'We are.' Therefore, your sin remains."
Okay, they threw him out of the synagogue. And Jesus then finds him. And they talk about spiritual blindness. As Jesus opens up this new conversation with him, his question really focuses on what? does he question about? Is it about his faith? In a sense, it's kind of like the question that I oftentimes ask people, and perhaps you have too at times, is ask someone, and typically I ask this when I'm dealing with folks who are already Christians, and I just typically ask them, well, where are you in your relationship with Christ? In a sense, that's kind of what he's asking him, you know. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Where are you in terms of your belief? And this man's expression back to Jesus, what does it indicate to us? What does it indicate? He really didn't know, at least my take on this is he really didn't know that it was Jesus for sure that had healed him. Mm-hmm. Okay? He couldn't see it. Right? Do you believe the Son of Man? Who is the Lord? That I might do what? I might believe in him. It's an expression of saying, what just happened to me, you say, I'm excited about. I want to know, where did this come from? You see? Now, contrast that, in other words, him and his reaction to, you know, we talked about the neighbors, we talked about the parents. Were these people really excited for this man that had been blind all of his life and now all of a sudden can see? They really weren't, were they? He is. Who is he, Lord? See? Tell me so that I can believe in him.
I know that you do.
Okay?
That's all we do.
Don't you think that he realized Jesus was somebody special? Maybe not knowing exactly who he was, but he knew this man that healed me. You know, he had the power of God in him. And so it was, I think, somewhere along the line, he had an inkling, but he wasn't sure. Because of his response immediately, you know, after he got this, I believe.
Yeah.
You know. So when he was healed, his faith had already grown by leaps and bounds.
Well, he had already expressed to the teachers of the law, the Pharisees, but nobody could do this kind of stuff unless God had sent him. You know, so he already had that, you know, understanding and belief. Whoever did this to me has got to be a man of God. Because nobody else could do that kind of thing. Who ever heard of a man being healed that was born blind? Who's ever heard of that before? So the only conclusion is the man who did it, whoever that was, has got to be a man from God. See? And look at this this statement that he makes, verse 36, tell me so that I may believe in him. See? That's an expression of hope and just the result of the Jesus touch. Consider where this man was. Okay? A blind beggar. What kind of hope did he have for his future? Absolutely none. See? Every day of his life, at least of his, you know, adult life, probably from the time he was, you know, really a child. Every day, beginning, somebody had to lead him out to his place on the street somewhere where he would sit for most of the day. And there were people to take pity on him. a while of people kind of showing him, I'm sure that he probably, you know, got used to the route and so he could make his way where he was going on his own. Nobody else had to be bothered with him. Every day he would go and sit there. What other future did he have? And then Jesus comes along. He gives him his sight. This day, tomorrow, is going to be a whole lot different, isn't it?
Yes.
So Jesus just gave him a new tomorrow. Not just spiritually, but physically. He gave him a new tomorrow. He doesn't have to go there and sit and beg anymore. He's got hope. Tell me who this man is, so that I may believe.
When you mentioned that you had to be led anywhere, Jesus said he was doing that. He gave him a chance to follow now, instead of having to be led. Well, maybe he didn't even want to go.
Yeah.
And I think you can't overlook the point, too, when he stood up for Jesus. To me, that was a big faith thing, too, because he knew full well that they would throw him out.
Okay.
And that was, he almost shunned by the whole town because you were thrown out of the synagogue. But this was not just an easy statement that he made. He knew that they would have consequences. And so he already aligned himself totally with God at that point. Even though he didn't quite know, exactly.
Tell me who he is so that I may believe in him. Anybody that could do this, that could be from God, and I'm going to put my faith in him. And then Jesus makes that statement to him. You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you.
Amen.
Don't lose the impact of the statement that Jesus makes. You have now seen him. He's never been able to see anything in his life. To say, never. And one of the earliest things, it's not the first thing that he saw, I think the first thing that he saw was probably the mud and water that he used to, you know, wash his eyes out, you see. But here he gets to see Jesus. You have now seen him, and the one who is speaking to you, that's me. Okay. Then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped Jesus. Jesus just gave this man a whole new life. And he's committed himself to Jesus. Now, Jesus from there then makes this statement, verse 39, about blindness. For judgment I have come into this world so that the blind may see, and those who see will become blind. What does he mean by that? Jesus come to make people blind? Well, what's his point here?
Not everyone is going to accept them.
Okay.
And so what he's doing is telling him that you can see, but there's going to be others that's not going to see. Although they can see, but they can't see because their mind is just kind of like, let them believe.
Okay.
And that's why the Pharisees were blind. They were talking to this man, knocking him, trying to knock him down,
What kind of blindness is Jesus referring to here? Certainly these folks could see with their physical eyes, but they're blind. Okay.
They were standing on their own understanding, and that's why they were blind. They were rejecting what they knew the truth, but they were so big-headed, so smart on your own, that you have rejected, you know, what God said. You want to stand on your own understanding, and you were always blind on your own.
Absolutely.
Their
arrogance and what they, you know, felt like they knew and so forth. It was blinding them to the truth. That's the key here, okay? That they are blinded from the truth. Which was, by the way, another condemnation of them, because they, you know, they declared their allegiance to Moses, who was the lawgiver, gave them the law and so forth, at least from their perspective, but yet they weren't even following Moses. I think the real important key is the thing that Chuck had brought up earlier. It really all hinges around the truth. Okay, that's when Jesus is talking about blindness here. It's spiritual blindness that is keeping someone from being able to see and accept the truth. That's what it's all about. And where does that really find its root? You see? It's in Satan. Okay? Satan, in a sense, you know, he blinds us to the truth. We don't want to accept that or what have you. Those who will reject, they're bound by Satan. And even though they may, you know, act religious, they talk religious, they, you know, do religious, they do all of that stuff, they're not following the truth. They're not seeking the truth. And so they're blind. And thus the whole aspect of claiming to be able to see. Okay, look at what Jesus says here at the very end of this. You know, when some of those Pharisees heard what he said and they got offended by it. What, are you saying we're blind?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, he was, exactly. But, you know, in a sense, it's like, you know, that old proverbial, give them enough rope and they'll hang themselves, right? What did they do? How does Jesus phrase that? Okay. If you were really blind, then you wouldn't be guilty of your sin. But because you say, you claim to be able to see, your guilt remains. Okay? So in other words, because they were claiming to have the truth, okay, but yet were really blind, they're going to be guilty of their sin. They will be held accountable for their refusal to accept the truth. So, in a sense, you know, I think so often we look at it in terms of, you know, the folks out there, you know what I mean when I say that, you know, the folks that aren't out there, they're out there in the world. They're not even trying. They're not claiming to be religious. They're not really even trying. That's one thing. But this is people who are claiming to know God. They're claiming to have the truth. Okay? And Jesus says, they're blind. That spiritual blindness, again, they may look religious, they may talk religious, they may act religious, but they're not following Him. They're blind.
Charlotte?
One of y'all have, okay. I saw a hand go up right over in this direction here.
In a way, is they believe in the God that they want a God to be.
Okay.
But instead of them being the person that God wanted them to be, they believe in the God that they actually even created because of their traditions that they added to it and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
They should have known more than anybody else who Jesus was, simply because of their self-proclaimed knowledge that they had. But they didn't. And I think that's where the blindness comes in.
Oh,
they
yeah.
let their own agenda blind them to what they had actually in front of them.
Exactly. They, you know, you're exactly right. You look at the whole situation that they had a concept of the Messiah that they had created, and Jesus didn't fit that pattern. See? And we've talked about this so many times before. A major part of the Messiah they had created, rather than, you know, again, as you've mentioned here, looking at what the Scriptures taught about the Messiah and what he was going to do, what he was going to be, and so forth, they created their own concept of Messiah, and the primary focus of that Messiah was going to be what? A what kind of king? An earthly king. It was all physical. See? He's going to come in, he's going to, you know, take his army, he's going to overcome the Romans, he's going to free us from oppression. He's going to set up his kingdom and establish his throne here in Jerusalem again, and we're going to be a free people to do what we want to do. And Jesus didn't fit. Just didn't fit. Have recreated, you know, in this case, as you mentioned, is the second coming of Jesus, you know, here's the pattern. And basically that pattern, you know, says what? Get another chance. You know, we get another chance. When Jesus comes, he's going to set up his kingdom. He's going to reign for 1,000 years, and we get another chance to get our act together, you see, before everything really ends. You see? And unfortunately, a lot of people already believe that, and I'm afraid more are going to believe it after they see this movie. Something that Charlotte had brought up earlier, you know, they thought they knew it all, and so, you know, yeah, what do I need to read the Scripture for to go back and look at this and compare, you know, yeah, I don't got it. We got it. Yeah. And yeah, that's exactly what's happening. So, you know, what we find here in the conclusion of this is that Jesus, as you mentioned earlier, takes this man and helps him to remove the label and to stand on his own. And standing on his own involved him proclaiming his faith in Jesus. Okay? And so as we conclude this study, this whole study here, we've been looking at Jesus in his encounters with these various people in their situations and circumstances, and how Jesus, you know, touch their lives. You know, from the couple at the wedding feast at Cana when he changed the water to wine, and the you know, again seeing how important even a situation like personal embarrassment, you know, is to God, that he would save this young couple from that kind of embarrassment and being shunned by their community because they didn't have enough provisions. Remember, we talked about when we were discussing that part of it, you know, don't get hung up on the wine part, you know, just focus on the provision. They were required to provide for the needs of their guests, and they couldn't. And so the Jesus touch took care of that. Nicodemus, you know, who's one of those religious leaders of his day, but an unusual one. because Nicodemus, he wanted to search. He wanted to inquire, to find out more about this guy. Couldn't this be the one? And ultimately, where did we see Nicodemus? What was the result of the Jesus touch in Nicodemus' life? Yeah, he helped Joseph of Arimathea bury Jesus. The woman at the well. Jesus touch. Take a woman who is a complete outcast in her own town, her own village. And then she goes back to the town and says, come see a man who's told me everything I've ever done. Opened up my sin before me. He didn't really reject me. He didn't throw me away. Is this be the Messiah we've been looking for? He brought a town to believe in Jesus. And that man at the pool who saw Jesus and his touch with him, holding him to accountability and responsibility. Do you really want to get well? Challenge that God gives to us. So we accept responsibility for ourselves and to do what we need to be doing. And then this man, Jesus helped to get rid of the lady. It's the Jesus touch. And hopefully, from looking at all of these different encounters, these things, that has given you and me some ideas on how we can do things differently as we encounter people in our lives, that we can share the Jesus touch with them and help at least in our part to move them a little bit closer to Jesus. I thank you for your participation in the study, and I hope that it has been and will continue to be a blessing to you. As I mentioned to you as we started, next Sunday morning we're going to begin a study on the book of James. All right? Okay, thank you all very much.